And then you are sitting for the first practice, seeing the sound intervenes very strongly. See what to do then. I told you, if you cannot bear that strong sound, it is better to divert your attention to seeing. That will polish down, I mean.
Instead of having a divert mind to seeing?
Yes, yeah, to seeing. I mean, lessen the, I mean, unbearableness of the thing. Or, need that portion, let the sound, follow the sound that will drag you into the beyond. Is it? Easy to which you like. If sound is very strong, then you cannot bear, then just divert your attention to see. Is it? That will, I mean, that unbearness will go. That will become bearable. Or, follow it. That will drag you into the beyond. You follow it?
Yes.
You need not, you may sit at the same, I mean, position, the same position, that makes no difference. Sitting position is always better because it is the position of the child in the womb of the mother. In that case, you withdraw. You simply begin to sit on feet. Your soul will withdraw. That is sitting position. That privilege is.
So I should change. If I'm going to listen, I should change.
All right, you just take the fingers from the thumbs from your ears and see. Repeat the name. That will follow you. Or if you follow it, that will drag you into the ground. Go and master will be waiting for you. Yes?
Master, how should one conduct oneself in the presence of a master?
That's a different position to see each man's own advancement. I think by questioning what I have seen, we put one question, one phase of it. He replies that. You simply give up all questions, simply hear it. And become receptive. All your questions will be replied. So I told you that I only put two questions to my master all through life. First was about visualizing master form that I told you. The other was, what is the proof that this science will be alive, remain alive after you? And he said, whomsoever I will order, I am responsible. For others, I am not. These are his words. And then I further put in the question, in what form he will be, if he is in sick form? So what's up with the sick of the artist? So these are all the questions. I learnt all simply looking at him and hearing what he said. Now this is not the fate of everybody who has stepped into the intellectual plane. He must have why and wherefore, he must understand the why and wherefore of things. He should put in clarify all this. Because he won't be able to take up the way unless he is intellectually satisfied. He's got some proof. So it's better always to clear your heart. As I told you, generally, there is one learned man, the other is unlearned man. And there is a stair on this stair to reach the top of the building. So when all is all right, he should go up to see sun. Go up. The unlearned man going up, you see. And the unlearned man saying, Maharu, first of all, give me any example, any evidence from anybody that is, I see sun when they go up. One thing. Then say, well, suppose my put to sleep, then what to do? You see? You would like to understand. Then you put in a day or two, go 50 steps, 40 steps, 30, then you see every day. It's not up. You know what? And it's there. You will see when you visualize, you withdraw your attention from outside. The rise above totally faculty. Mind is still. The feet of the soul that make the eyes. That is your attention just there, the place where the humanity is there, third eye or single eye is there. You see that? It is going up, you see that? So those who are something that person, they should let loose all, give all questions. That's what they say, those who look at. Sometimes you write to me, this is why the food, this is, I don't know how you come in. I mean, he writes, I want only all alone time with you. All right, I'll give it, you come here, sit inside the room and lock it up, keep the key with yourself. Don't come out unless your questions are inside. This is what I tell them, what to do. Questions are the same nature in a different way put up, that's all. Unless you go up, you cannot see. When you're near the top of the roof, near the roof, then you see little glimpses of light. You really go up, see the full light. So if that is who have entered the plane of intellectual plane, they should be satisfied. Then these, all these seem to be explained, such and such master said, such and such said, such and such said. Only for his little courage to take off, it appears to be correct, but he is not satisfied unless he sees for himself.
What's the explanation of the different colors of lights that are seen in meditation?
No book will give you, I can. But that is Jesus for it. That is Jesus for it. That depends on the inner development background, some dominating attributes in his life, you see? That's the call of all different colors. So, yellow, golden light is special. Pure milk, pure white light also. This is special. So red light you will find here that there is some other rajogun driving, pushing attitude. So these are different stages, different colors. Different sounds also.
Are they different lights for different people, or are they the same progression of lights for everybody?
Those who have got background, they go up further. Those who have to start just from then, there's a regular way. You see sky, you see stars, there's which stars, then torch and the moon comes, then torch and those who have got the background, they start all at once from there. That's it.
Because I'm just thinking, every morning in here, when we meet, everybody sees various lights, and
yes.
We seem to be about on the same level, many of us.
Well, yes, not folks, but some to know. There are these two masters. Master Tavon Singh.
Yeah, now that, of course, is beyond most of us. But
not beyond, I guess. Let us see, I'm for those who are there, what do they have? They talk to us.
Blue light. I didn't touch on that. Everybody seems to see the blue light. Yeah, what's that?
That's the first.
Yeah.
Loving attitude. You see, the picture of the Lord Krishna, blue, the feet, you see, yellow, blue, and light, and then golden light. These are three. Some of the ugly. Form, you see, his face in blue, clothes are the yellow, and that is, that turns the combination of different developments.
So really, when you start to meditate, you should try to get at that golden light as rapidly as possible.
You cannot visualize, you see. That comes after itself. when you reach that point, that is it. But that is, I told you, that is where mass of home manifests.
And these lights just seem to stay for a short time. Will that increase as time goes by?
By regular practice. Regular practice. And that time is increased only the longer you can stay whatever you see, continue without break. The more progress will also be. Yeah.
Suppose you have to scratch yourself, does that take you right back to the beginning again?
You're not reading about body consciousness. Otherwise, if you're reading about, you won't feel it. No, you won't. That means you're still not at the top of his room, you see. You're still on the way, 50 steps or 70 steps or something. You know?
Some people have said too that just about all the body consciousness disappears and there they are up above, but nothing else happens. That's where the grace of the Master enters in, isn't it?
Grace of the Master works the very first day when you initiate. It is there. Money deposits your name in the bank. That is why you go to the window to have the money there. The more you can stay in the window, the more you can ask.
If you don't mind my saying...
No, I don't mind anything. Do what possible.
I think I've read in some books...
books written by whom?
That the grace...
Written by whom?
Either by...
Written by whom, I tell you.
Either by you or by your master, Salman Singh.
Tell me. I hope I'm very fine.
That the grace of the Master is at the pure discretion of the Master.
Surely.
Is that discretion sometimes, does that imply then that on occasion the Master might like someone more than someone else?
What? In the worldly man? Is he a worldly man?
No. I mean among initiates, shall we say.
Among initiates who are more obedient, is there more opposite?
He gets more grace.
Grace, the more you turn your face, the more grace you have it.
Yes.
You check your eyes in the room and you say, oh, you see, don't see any light, then it is for you to come out.
Yes.
He has love, you see, that is why he initiates. Nobody, man may give clothes, may give money, may give buildings. Nobody gives his life. He gives his life. His life is light and sound. He gives his life, his very life, to start with, so that you will join. And who can give? Here also, you find Vishnu will give his blood. That he thinks is a very great sacrifice he has made. But he gives his life. His life is what word made flesh.
You placed a portion of your life in us.
Man, yes. Man who sees life is in he gives you light. So if there's no life, then how can you give light? From the burning lamp, you can light another lamp. But the lamp which is not already lit, how can you, another lamp to be lit?
That gets me back to a question that I asked earlier, but which perhaps I didn't phrase well enough.
Yes.
That seems appropriate.
All right, welcome.
How should we behave in the presence of a master? Some of us aren't certain. Some of us wonder if we're doing the right thing, if we're according the correct courtesy and so on.
That is. Quote him in whatever attitude you like, if you are really after the truth. You won't be annoyed by your question 101. Yes. Saying, practicing, and loving. You may go to him even for criticism. You give in a very loving way the reply to them. If he understands, he will change. People come like that also. They put so many 101 questions, and they will see, because I told you, many things are taught not by tongue. Only one third. Two thirds through direction. Twice. So when a man sits in front, his soul was eyes at the windows of the soul. That also says two thirds. One third by word of mouth.
I mean, you behave toward a master as one would toward an emperor?
Hmm? What? Take him as your elder brother. Take him as your father, as your son. Just understand what he says. When you get something substantial, for which you bear out evidence yourself it is so, then start, go on, what he says. The highest criterion, I think, is a master that is able to give you something to start, some capital to start. That capital is given only by raising your body part, for a while. He, whosoever can give you that, you can say safely, he's got something. Yeah. How great he is, I think when you know him, how great you become, that way you become. In the early times when he went to my master, some people told him, how great is your master? So I told him, I don't know how great he is, that much I know for certain is more than what I want. Very honest to that. If you know a guru or a master, you become a master. You cannot be no real. Very few people really know the master. They know only that much some part of it. Whatever he can be sent to give something to them.
While you are having this talk here with us tonight,
yes.
Are you having similar talks on other planes with more highly advanced of your initiates?
You see, the devotees, they are not left alone, you see. Though they are not taken to the world, they are taken to the different planes where they are fit, to whatever stage they are advanced. If there is no attachment for the world left, except for the master, he will not be sent down to the man by the evil. You take the first segment, give a power from further. He advises them there. But there is one thing to note. It takes much longer time to have that thing as compared to what you can have now in shorter time. What you can do in years there, you can do in months here. Why I press it? Why my master press? If a learned man, if a scholar, is the only scholar after that when he is scholar while alive. If I go out of this building, does not mean they have changed. Whatever we have done, we go to that place. From there we have to go. The more we can do it, the better.
But it must be done correctly.
And proper guidance and help. Help too.
By receptivity. Does incorrect meditation count in our favor?
It is as compared with not doing it better. That's what it says. But it is not, you won't have the progress. Yeah. Well, Hafez is a great saint, Vapasya. He says, well, sit down in meditation at his door. Don't think whether he has heard it or not. Your duty is to sit at his door, quite cut off from the world. And that is all. Nothing more to be done. Do it. Quite cut off from the world, then you have it. Why we don't transcend? Because we are tight. We have got so many entanglements.
Assuming that we are able to have complete concentration,
yes,
how long should it take ordinarily for our body to become completely numb?
When Master initiates, he takes you into the Nandodhi city, full sun, full moon, some classy full moon, the very first year initiation. It happens here. Then?
Yes.
It's about Nandodhi, it is the little part of him. Each man has his own according to background, of course. But there are cases like that. Who class is big star, class of the moon, asana also. It doesn't take long. One man put this question at the room. I explained to you, I went to their home when I went to Palau Vinyavata. I was in the time of my master. Then when he asked, when I went to my office on the way, I just entered their home, sit down, they were all sitting, husband and other brothers. How long it takes to leave the body, to be down. I told him, do you want to know? I said, they thought he is dead. It takes no time, it's a question. That is practice, you see. That's the table. In the beginning, it is difficult. The very first day, how much you do, you see, you get something. That something only comes when you rise above the body conscious or nearing the top. Isn't it? Then you have to do it. This is a very regular fact that 2 and 2 make 4. No doubt about it, people can have and see. And that's the only criterion of a must. No propaganda. Propaganda, people have money, they do so much. One untruth, propaganda is truth. 10 times, 20 times, that becomes as equal as truth.
I'm not sure of the exact wording of Tracy's question, but why is it that it's so much more difficult to listen to the sound than it is to look for the...
Because the mind is killed with that. Man would like to go into the opening of the canyon center in there rather than hear the sound. Because the hearing the sound kills the mind forever. You engage in seeing, all right. But hearing the sound is difficult. You see, my death is come. It is out of out of it.
Do you still want us to have exactly the same amount of sound listening as sight viewing?
That depends if you how far you would like to advance. Want to advance quicker, you would like to put in more time. Both are counterparts, light and sound. I think you give equal time, you advance quicker. But then we do that. Simply if you have the sound will drag you into the you see light. Well, I don't mean man must know where he's going. You see, both light is necessary to know where you are going. The sound will drag you like a you do not know where you are going. So both should be there. Sound is the guiding principle. Those who take up the only light, they are enveloped by light, do not know where to go for it. There is the sound principle guides. If you are not well, then all these Hindu gentlemen, they disappear from this sound. But when they are enveloped by sound and light, they don't know what to do for it. Where to go? Both things go hand in hand.
I think somebody's trying to make some kind of signal, and I don't know what the meaning of it is.
What's happening? You know the Kapha Dhamma? What's up? Signal is there. Thank you, Mark.
I have no more questions.
No. You put it in the chat to the side, you see? Thank you, out loud. Yes? Thank you.
Thank you.
No thanks. Thanks to Teddy Novelli. That's what Teddy told me the other day. Thousands of darling wishes are I thank you. You give a little taste of one thing, you give him. So thank you, thank you. That was something. Miss Nama, I would say.
Should we stop saying thank you?
No, this is what I said. What? He gave a few from my own self, then also very poor thanks. But I said, don't give anything from my own self. This is what I've got. Somebody's, what you say. Don't give it to me to look at. My master saw me where his friend saved. So he said, all right, go and have it and do it. Because it's not my and my head is only kept in me. It's seven. Man should put, I think it would be better if you put any food there. Some fish will give him more concentration. And sound principle is the only way to control the mind. Quicker way. Lord Krishna has in his lifetime that he is plunged into the river Jamna. There was a dragon with 100 heads. And he played on flute and controlled it. That's a metaphor. To show this mind is the 100-headed dragon within us. There are 100 ways to mislead us. If that can be controlled, only can be controlled by that sound. Guru Ram Dass says, when you come in contact with Nam, mind is controlled. Nam is your mantra. Things are very clear, yeah, they like. Not difficult as people think. Again, I will say it is difficult to be of a man. God is searching here. Yeah, you are man. Kavi says, I am so purified now. Then God is after me, calling me, Kabir, 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 he's after me, calling me like anything. So you've got 4 or 5 sons. One son is very dutiful. He doesn't understand in a very inkling what is in his mind. He follows that without asking for it. Do you think father will not be after him? Of course, he was here to every son, but he was foremost to whom he was hand over all the keys to look after the insects of others too. He won't give keys to everybody. D-level, regulated base. Take when you have initiated that God power is acting, that Master power, Christ power. It won't leave you unless till the end of the world, unless you take it to Satnam. Further Satnam takes you into further, adopts you into this world state. Now, taking is using you one thing. And for the don't purposely talk and break his mind. Such a man is not to fear, not in this world, but in the 3 worlds. You keep all your way. Baba Jamal Singh, when you initiate somebody, you say, look here, I have now resided in you. Mind that. Don't do anything unlawful. This is really what Baba Jamal Singh used to say. I am now sitting in you, residing in you. very youth. Or then when they came back, or what have you done? How far you proceeded?
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first half of a question and answer session with the Master on September 16, 1970, which was given the name To Him Who Is Obedient. Our reader this morning is Christine Clevenger. Hello, Christine.
Hello, David, and good morning to all who are present. I'm going to continue reading from the Japji, beginning with stanza 3, the commentary and hymn, and continuing with Guru Nanak and his teachings, a biographical study by Kirpal Singh. Commentary. Nanak, as a great teacher, anticipates the confusion that might arise in the minds of some seekers by the study of various scriptures. These do not always say the same thing about God's will, but there is no need for doubt and skepticism, for what they really describe is not God's will, which in itself is indescribable, but its various workings and manifestations. God's will pervades and directs His creation, but it is something more, something that is itself and above and beyond creation. Stanza 3. Some sing of His greatness, but only according to the power bestowed upon them. Some sing of His bounties, taking them as His signs. Some sing of Him as incomprehensible. Some sing of Him as transmitting dust into life and life into dust again, creator and destroyer, the giver of life and its withdrawer. Some sing of Him as at once the nearest and the most remote. There is no end to His description. Countless have tried to describe Him, but He still stands beyond all description. His recipients may tire, but His bounty is untiring. Ages upon ages, man has fed upon it. His will directs the world, and yet, O Nanak, He dwells beyond concern or care. And now continuing with Guru Nanak and his teachings. Guru Nanak wanted to reform religion, to lift it from the formal and conventional to the simple and the practical. Etymologically, the term religion comes from the roots re, back, and legio, or ligore, to bind. Religion, then, is something that binds and unites the soul to Oversoul or God. When masters come, those who meet them and come into their close contact derive the maximum benefit of getting their souls linked with the manifested light and sound of God. The social religions come into being after the masters pass away. They are made, no doubt, with a noble purpose, the purpose of keeping the teachings of their founders alive. As long as practical men remain in the social orders, the followers continue to get the benefit as before. Later on, for want of such practical men, these social orders acquire rigid formations, and the very institutions set up with the noblest of intentions and the best of motives become ironclad prison houses and begin to stagnate and stink with hair-splitting polemics in which the spirit gets lost under the mass of dead verbiage. The purpose of religious education is to draw out the best in man and make him an integrated whole, physically, emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually. That religion is best which turns out more and more ideal persons with a harmonious development in all their parts. The highest objective of Sikh religion is to turn out Khalsas. A Khalsa is one who witnesses within him the Puran Jyoti, the supreme light of God in full effulgence. Similarly, a Hindu is one who makes manifest in him the Jyoti of Ishvara and listens to the unending and unstruck music of the soul, Anhad and Anhatnad, the symbols of which he adores and worships outside in his temples and shrines by lighting candles and striking bells. A true Muslim is one who sees the Nur of Allah, or the light of God, and hears the Kalam-e-Kadim, the voice of God, the most ancient music or song ceaselessly going on within him. A true Christian, likewise, is one who bears testimony to the light of God and hears the sound of God, which transforms him into an awakened spirit at the Mount of Transfiguration. Nanak put great emphasis on direct experience of the divinity that lies within us. For mere reading of the scriptures and observing the rites and rituals of worship cannot take the place of the reality. These are the elementary steps, but not enough in themselves. Nanak was a poet saint and a bard of the open secret, a preacher of the spirit and power of God enlivening the humankind. He went from place to place chanting the sacred name and preaching the love of God. He visited Hindu places of pilgrimage, the Muslim shrines, and other holy places. Closer is he than the very life breath, and nearer than the hands and feet. As Lao Tse said, without going out of doors, we may yet know the essence of the world. This essence is called the Nam, the Sat Nam, the eternal word. His life was dedicated to preaching the practice of the holy word. He taught the people that in the holy word was hidden a great healing power which healed all the ills of life. He loved the Hindus and the Muslims alike. Speaking to the Hindus, he said, "Praise and glorify God 5 times, as the Muslims offer prayers to Allah 5 times a day. Speaking to the Muslims, he said, "Make the will of Allah your rosary. Be ye a real Muslim after renouncing your little self." At this, quite a few Muslims involuntarily cried aloud, "God is speaking to us in Nanak." Even when in Mecca he taught the doctrine of strict monism or the unity of Godhead, interpreting the wisdom of the Prophet, he uttered the name Allah with the same reverence as he did the name of Hari. On seeing him, Sheikh Farid greeted Nanak with the words, "Allahu," or "Thou art Allah." The Guru replied, "Allah is the only aim of my life, O Farid. Allah is the very essence of my being. All call on the one God by different names, maybe Ram, Rahim, Allah, Wahiguru, and the like. There are many lovers of God, and He is the life-giving force to all of them. Although bearing the badge of different religions, all have the same ideal before them, to worship the indwelling spirit, called by so many names. There is no caste, said the Guru, for we claim brotherhood with all. Each one of his followers was lovingly addressed as a bhai or a brother. All are bhais, our brethren, whether kings or slaves, the rich or the poor. No caste and creed counts in the court of the Lord. He who worships him is dear unto him, said the Guru. He mingled freely with the poor, the downtrodden, the outcast, and the neglected. He accepted the invitations from the poor in preference to those of the rich, who he knew invited him for self-glorification and whose earnings were anything but righteous. He considered that there was no sin greater than the spirit of separateness which went against the solidarity of life in the brotherhood of man and worked for disruption in society. This prophet of unity and oneness saw the higher harmony in all the faiths in the religion of man, the worship of God, and the service of God in man. He wanted the followers of all faiths to sit together as seekers after truth, seeking communion with the Almighty. The highest religion teaches us to reverently study and experience in full consciousness the living presence of God as like-minded students in a class. When questioned at Mecca as to whether he was a Hindu or a Muslim, he frankly and fearlessly declared that he was neither the one nor the other in particular, because he discerned the Spirit of God in both. When asked which of the two religions, Hinduism or Islam, was superior, he said, "Without good acts, the professors of both the religions shall perish." In one of his hymns, he says, "To him whose delusion of the mind is gone, Hindu and Muslim are alike." At Baghdad, the people questioned him as to which sect he belonged. He replied, "I have renounced all sects. I only know the one true God, the Supreme Being who is on the earth, in the heaven, and in between, and in all directions." On being further pressed as to who he actually was, he replied, "This body, compounded as it is of the five elements, is being illumined by the light of God and is just addressed as Nanak." Again and again, he warned his disciples against the sin of separateness. In a beautiful passage, he declared, "Numberless are thy worshippers, and numberless thy lovers. Numberless thy bhaktas and saints, who lovingly fix their thoughts on thee. Numberless the musical instruments, and the sound thereof, and so are thy musicians." In the course of his travels, he had with him two attendants, one a Hindu and the other a Muslim, Bhai Bala and Bhai Mardana. He poured his love to all, setting at naught all conventions, creeds, castes, and color bars. He was a brother of the poor, the criminal, and the persecuted. His socialism was vibrant with love, born of God, and not atheistic in character. Growing out of a vision of God's love, it flowed into the hearts of men as brothers in God. A new Indian nation can be built even now, but not in blind imitation of the West. We must accept the vital message of the seers, the prophets, and the saints of the East who are well conversant with the conditions of our society and have a rich spiritual heritage behind them. The next chapter, Guru Nanak, God Intoxicated. From a very early age, Nanak was fond of meditation. He would go to a forest and for long hours sit there in rapt silence. He would meditate on the great mystery of life, a mystifying mystery indeed. Where does life come from? How does it work in us? How does the great controlling power sustain us from day to day? Is it possible to contact this power? These were the vital questions that he posited for himself. Nanak's father tended to regard his son as insane. One day he called a physician to attend upon him. As the latter felt the pulse, Nanak said, "O physician, I am not mad. I am only smitten with pangs of love for God. They call me mad, but I am not. I am simply God intoxicated." Nanak was overflowing with the love and glory of God. He radiated love of God to all who came in contact with him. He was verily Word made flesh and dwelt amongst us. He opened the inner eye of those who came to him and enabled them to witness the light of God within them. He was the light of the world as long as he remained in the world. The light manifested itself in him, and he guided the tottering humanity with that light. This light never vanishes, but always remains in each one of us. We have to break the stone walls of our passions and prejudices, of separateness and sectarianism, in order to have a vision of the divine light in full splendor. The guru, like all other masters, advised, "Kindle the light which is within ye. Ye are the children of light. Be ye lamps unto yourselves." India and all other countries of the world need heaven's light for their guidance. This was the universal call of Nanak to the whole humanity. He offered the water of life and the bread of life, the light and the nod, as food to the starving souls of the people, having which nothing else remained to be had. God is love, and love is God, and the way back to God is also through love. He was love personified, and inspired love in everyone. He always sang, "Teach me how to live immersed in thy meditation day and night. Grant, O Lord, that I may never think of aught save thee, and that I may sing of thee ever and evermore. Again, O my heart, love God as the lotus loves the water. The more it is beaten by the waves, the more its love enkindles. having received its life from water, it dieth without water. O my heart, love God as the tatrick loves the raindrops, who, even when fountains are full and the land green, is not satisfied as long as it cannot get a drop of rain. And again, whichever side I cast mine eyes, there thou art. Parted from thee, I crack and die. To reach God, teaches Guru Nanak, one must walk the way of love. Love God alone, and if you love others, your children and friends and relatives, love them for His sake. Yearn for Him. Develop within you an intense longing for Him, and when you feel restless for Him, know that it will not be long before He will reveal Himself to you. He was the prophet of the inner life and urged that the inner should be expressed, not in creeds and dogmas, rites and rituals, but in humble service of the poor and the lowly. And this service must be inspired by the love of God and Nam, the spirit and power of God. Nanak says, O man, how canst thou be free without love? For the word of God, the Nam, will reveal to thee the Lord within thee, and grant thee the treasure of love. Love-filled, let the seeker become the bridegroom's bride. Filled with bhakti, the disciple be dyed in the true color of love. Such a bride shall never be a widow, for she abideth in the Satguru. On her free head is the jewel of love. And except the bridegroom, she knoweth none. Awake, awake, O seeker, awake. Renounce the little wisdom of the ego. Love-filled, think ever of his lotus feet. Do as he biddeth thee to do. Surrender thy body and thy soul to Him. Surrender thyself, so mayest thou meet thy Lord. Guru Nanak was a true mystic in communion with God and perceiving His all-pervading, munificent grace. He exclaimed, Nanak sees the Lord in all His glory. Intoxicated with the love of the Lord, he remained in a state of perpetual ecstasy. Once Babar offered Nanak a cup of hemp. The Guru politely declined, saying, O Emperor, the intoxication of this substance is just of an ephemeral nature, but I am ever in a state of divine inebriation under the powerful influence of the Holy Nam. For meditation, Nanak prescribed a regular course of spiritual discipline, for without it one could not progress on the path. The first is the devotion to Nam. In the opening lines of Japji, the daily morning prayer of the Sikhs, the God power is termed as Sat Nam, or the eternal truth. It is in the name that the life of religion is rooted. So the name. Now is the season to throw away all doubts and misgivings. Burn to ashes all your silk and velvet fineries if they take you away from the name of the Lord. The Guru then sums up the qualities required of a devotee on the spiritual path. Purity of thought, speech, and deed is the first prerequisite for the dawn of higher life. Christ too said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Purity is verily the key that unlocks the door of meditation, leading to the mansion of the Lord. Secondly, one must develop patience and perseverance to bear cheerfully whatever good or evil may befall as a reaction to our actions. Thirdly, one must have control over one's thoughts, casting away all desires so as to ensure equilibrium of the mind. Fourthly, a steady practice every day of the presence of the living God by communion with the Word in full faith in the Master Power above. Fifthly, one must live in holy awe of His presence, stimulating one to untiring effort to achieve ultimate union with Him. And above all, one must love God with such an intensity as may burn up all dross in us, leaving us free to proceed unhampered to His kingdom. The next chapter, An Ideal Farmer. A lover of freedom, Guru Nanak spent his early days in the freedom of the farm and the open air of the countryside. As he grew older, he traveled far and wide, exhorting the people to free their minds of conventional thoughts and convivialities of life. On his return from his far-flung travels, he settled down at Kartarpur as a farmer. He was a true son of the soil, a passionate peasant who had cultivated much harder things than earth, the mind and the intellect, etc. After man-making and man-service, he engaged himself in land service, for to grow a blade of grass and to raise a stalk bearing an ear of grain was to him much better than the work of a mere priest or a preacher. He set an example of hard labor by bringing under cultivation the barren lands of Kartarpur for feeding the poor and the needy on the produce thereof. He also set up at Kartarpur the institution of Langar, or a system of free community feeding, where both bread and broth were distributed freely to all according to the needs of each. Bread was the Lord, the Guru declared, and the bread which the Lord gave was His prasad, God-given. Bread and water belong to the Guru, echoed the followers. And the Guru said that the Beloved was in the people. His disciples came from far-off places like Baluchistan, Afghanistan, and Central Asia, and included, among others, the Brahmins and the Sufis, the high-caste Kshatriyas, and the low-caste Chandalas, the Siddhas, and the Naths. Thus, His following was a conglomeration of all sorts of people, knit together in the bonds of loving devotion to the holy cause, and vying with each other in the labor of love for the fallen and the downtrodden. Nanak, their spiritual father, now advanced in age, moved on foot every day, laboring in the farms, and singing hymns of Naam and breathing the benediction of love. The Guru was a picture of humility, and his followers, in a spirit of dedication, worked as humble servants of the Lord, worshiping God without any pomp and show in the stillness of nature. And here I will stop and tell you that this reading was from the Japji, beginning with stanza 3, commentary and hymn, and continuing with Guru Nanak and His Teachings, a biographical study by Kirpal Singh. Thank you to our gracious Master.
And thank you, Christine, for reading for us. There were 87 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Christ lived before Jesus and after too. Christ's power was the God power which manifested that the human soul of man, Son of Man. We have great respect for Son of Man, a true soul that God power was. But that continues forever.